Hello and welcome to Let's Talk IVF. Our aim is to cut through the overwhelming amount of clinical information and give you a clearer understanding about the science, the emotional impact, and everything in between. Hosted by Sophia Beziotto, a scientist with 25 years of experience in the field of fertility, we want to thank you for listening. Now, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to the show. Today on the show, we have Jasmine Katakan. Jasmine is an artist and she is going to talk to us today about her fertility journey and how she approached that from the mindset of an artist. All the way from New York City.
Hi, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Now, I guess first off, can we start by sharing a little bit of your journey? How long did you try to conceive before you attended a fertility clinic?
Before I actively went to a fertility clinic, it was about a year, a little under a year. They tell you to wait a year. I was being very impatient. So about, like, I'd say 11 months.
Okay. So I guess tell us a little bit about your story. So before you attended the clinic, a little bit about your background and sort of what you do.
Yeah, so as a profession, I am a lighting artist on feature animated films, movies like Ice Age and Ferdinand and Rio and Peanuts and that kind of thing. That's what I do in my day job. Growing up, I grew up in New York and haven't really left, I guess. I went away for school but came back. And I kind of was fed this kind of life plan that I was supposed to go through, right? You get good grades, you go to a good school, you get a good career, you meet someone, you have a family, you work hard, and then you retire, right? So that, to sum it up, that was like what many of us, I feel like, are told. And I was going along that path. And, you know, I was checking all the boxes, good school, good career. I got married. And then when it came to having children, that's when I hit the biggest roadblock. I mean, of course, there's obstacles before then, but nothing that I couldn't figure out. And I still feel really naive when I think about I had it all planned out. I was like, I'm going to wait until I'm 30 and then try to have kids. And I'm going to have 3 kids by the time I'm 35. No problem. And then move on to the next, you know, checklist on my life plan. So 30 hit and I started trying. And, you know, I was surprised. I feel like many, when the first month or two I wasn't pregnant. And then I started getting worried, like the month turned into 3 months, turned into 6. And eventually, as I said, by the 11th month, I was concerned and we went to a fertility clinic.
Yeah, look, and that's exactly right what you're saying. So many people just have that life plan and you just assume that everything will fall into place when the time is ready. Now, in terms of cycles, how many did you have and over what length of time? So you waited 11 months and tell me what happened then.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a blur now. There's so many cycles, but I went in at 11 months. I was given, we took all the tests, both me and my husband, all, you know, the initial tests they give. They found nothing out of the ordinary. So at that point, they said it's unexplained infertility since they didn't find anything. And they started us on IUIs for that. And honestly, like, we, through my whole journey, I probably did at least 6 IUIs, and I also have done through my lifespan 4 IVFs. And the IUIs were probably in the span of like the first 2 to 3 years, and the IVFs were the last 2 years. And then, not to give a spoiler alert, but then there was a break, and then I tried for my second, which was another IVF. So in the span of 5 years, I had probably 6 to 7 IUIs and 3 IVFs.
Wow, that is a great deal of treatment, isn't it? Now, what did you find as the most difficult aspect of your treatment?
By far, the emotional. I mean, the treatments are not comfortable. It's very time consuming. There's a lot of needles involved, but that I feel like, you know, you can prepare yourself for that. It's predictable, right? You have, you know what's coming. You know that they're going to take blood and you have to go to this exam. But the emotional was the hardest for me. It was the lack of control, not knowing if it was going to work, right? They're just, not that they're guessing, but like, there's no definitive answer. Like, if you do this, you're going to get pregnant, especially with unexplained fertility. I felt like I was just like shooting in the dark, trying all these things, and nothing was working. And emotionally, it takes a huge toll. It's very isolating. It's very lonely. I definitely think that was the most difficult aspect that I honestly did not expect going in. I expected the physical to be the hardest.
Yeah, look, that is something that is reported so often. I speak to a lot of clients, and that's, they didn't budget on it impacting every single aspect of their life. The emotional side sort of takes over, and it is a massive impact. Did you have friends, Jasmine, around you that could support you at this time?
No, to be honest. I mean, I had friends, but honestly, I didn't tell anybody. Like, I kept it completely to myself because, honestly, I look back and, you know, it was something that I thought it was a fault, like it was wrong. And I didn't want to share that with anyone. I barely spoke to my husband about it. It was only in the last year of trying that I even told my immediate family. So, I mean, I think that would have definitely helped if I had been more open and had more of a community to share it with, but I didn't. And that definitely made it more difficult.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your husband there. Now, how strong was your relationship, I guess, on this journey? Did you get any outside help, or did you just sort of struggle through the process?
No, yeah, we didn't get any outside help. I mean, both me and my husband are the type of personalities that were pretty quiet as people, and we definitely wouldn't have been, that wouldn't have been our go-to. I will say that the relationship got stronger because it was just the two of us, because he was not sharing it either. So we only had each other. We probably should have spoken about it more than we did, but it was nice to have each other. He was really supportive. He would come to, you know, most of the appointments with me, even though he didn't have to physically, which, you know, created such a support. And I will say it was a part in my journey where I found out that it was my own, I don't want to say fault because it's not fault, but it was my physical obstacle that was preventing us to conceive. And I felt a tremendous amount of guilt because, you know, all of a sudden it was me in the way of him becoming a father. And we did have a talk about it. Like, I actually initiated a talk at one point that, you know, maybe he should go so he can be a father, because I didn't want to be his barrier. And, you know, he didn't agree, he didn't go, but that just being so open, and it made us a lot stronger and closer together as a result.
Wow, that is such an incredible statement to make to someone as well, that, you know, if you want to be a father, go, and I don't want to stand in your way. That would have taken an incredible amount of strength to actually say that to someone you love.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it was about year 5 of trying, and we had just received some pretty devastating news. I'll just say it, around after my first IVF cycle, we never made it to transfer. So I was supposed to have a day 5 transfer for my first IVF cycle. And I got the update around day 2 or 3, you know, it's looking good, come in. I had the appointment for my day 5 transfer. And we were very optimistic because it was our first time doing IVF. And we just figured it's going to work. And I still remember I was at the door for day 5. To get my transfer, so excited. And the clinic called me and they said, don't bother coming in because we just checked and none of them made it to day 5. None of them made it to blastocyst in order to get a transfer. And it was devastating. That news was devastating because, you know, I went through the whole IVF, you know, cycle. I did the retrieval, I did all the meds, and I felt like I got cheated. Like, I didn't get my chance to even get the transfer. And that's when we were told that, you know, the new diagnosis was poor egg quality. It was no longer unexplained. They said, it seems like your eggs are the issue. And that's where it came down to, I felt like guilty that I was the one that was stopping us from having children. And what happened after that is, you know, I was proactive, even though they said I couldn't improve egg quality. They had said that, you know, acupuncture has been seen possibly to improve it. So I went down that route and many other routes, to be honest with you. But I took a detox for 3 months. I did acupuncture. And after the second IVF, and then we did a second IVF. And I was like, okay, I did so much work. It's going to be better. And ultimately, the same thing happened. Like almost, it was like Groundhog's Day, almost to the T. It's just like day 3, it was looking fine. Day 5, that morning they called and they said, don't come in. And actually after that call is when I approached my husband about, you know, possibly leaving, because it was really hard. But what was even harder was the following day I met with the doctor, and I expected her to have an alternative solution. Like, well, she did have an alternative solution, but a more like, okay, this IVF cycle didn't work, let's focus on the next one. And I was expecting a plan for the next IVF cycle, but instead, when I sat down, she started talking about egg donors and adoption, and I kind of like stepped back and I said, wait, why are we not, can I not try with my own eggs? And she just looked at me, she's like, no, I don't recommend it. And I said, and at this point I was 35 years old. So it was kind of ironic where, you know, in my life plan at 35, I would have had 3 kids by now, but instead at 35, I'm sitting in this doctor's office and I'm pushing her to ask, like, say, is it not possible? And then she comes back with, I give you less than a 1% chance of having your own child. And she went further to say that they will not do another IVF cycle with me with my own eggs. They would only do it if it was a donor egg. And then I asked again, and she said less than 1%. So here I am sitting after, this is my 5th year probably of trying, and also my second clinic, and she's telling me less than 1%. So that was definitely, I don't want to say the low point of my journey, but because it actually resulted in something pretty great, but it was the most devastating, I will say, by far, of the journey. And I forget what the initial question was. I got lost in the story. But at that moment is when I feel like our relationship with my husband got even stronger. Because, you know, at that point, we already had the discussion. I did say to him, like, offer still stands, you know, if you want out. But we worked together. And ultimately, what happened was, you know, it would have been so easy for me to leave that appointment and just stop trying, which, you know, after 5 years and having a professional tell you that you have less than a 1% chance and that they won't even consider it unless you do an egg donor is really daunting, right? And what happened was I don't know why I did this, but I went straight to work because I'm very dedicated, I guess. I remember going straight to work and I was sitting there, and still at this point I had no support because I wasn't open. So no one at work was there. You know, I couldn't confide in anyone. I just had to pretend like everything was normal, be productive. And I remember sitting there, and what happened was, like, a problem came to my attention, a work obstacle. And to distract me, I started tackling it. And I realized the way I tackle a work problem through a kind of an artist mindset, designer mindset, was very different than the way I was looking at my fertility struggles, right? And the big difference was, for my fertility, I realized for 5 years, I was kind of trusting people too much, and trusting that, you know, I didn't seek other people's advice enough or get different perspectives and brainstorm and troubleshoot and also make sure I was focusing on the right things. Where at work, when I have a problem, I will step back, make sure I know what the problem is, because sometimes the initial problem isn't the right problem to solve, and also brainstorm with people and get different perspectives and find multiple solutions to a problem. And that's when I was like, there are multiple solutions to my fertility, and it can't just be the one doctor doctor's opinion. And that's when I started looking at my fertility with this lens. And I talked to, the next day, I spoke to my acupuncturist to get a different perspective on it, for example. And she came to me because she knew my history as well, because I've been working with her. So we brainstormed, and she actually suggested another clinic that might be a better fit for me, and a specific doctor even. And I went to see this doctor, and then he gave me his own opinion, which he didn't really agree with the less than 1% chance. And he had a different protocol. He said, let's try a day 3 transfer, for instance. So, and what happened was, within, I did another IVF cycle with him, and within a couple months of me sitting in that other doctor's office telling me that I have less than a 1% chance, I got pregnant.
Wow. Yeah. That's an incredible, incredible story.
So it was huge, right? Like, I could have, and I feel like most people would have done that, would have just stopped after 5 years and just all the exhaustion and frustration. But just that shift that I had in my mindset and my approach to it, and getting multiple people to give me feedback the same way I'll do at work and as an artist, it made such a, and I actually kicked myself, like, why didn't I do this sooner? But, you know, so like that's basically, yeah. So I got pregnant with the third IVF. I have a beautiful daughter. She's 4 years old now. I love her so much. And I will say that I still kept it in. I kept the journey in for, like, after I had my daughter. And what I realized, I had an aha moment when I was on maternity leave, and I was posting pictures of my daughter, you know, on social media. And, you know, I think one of my friends wrote something like, oh, you have the most perfect life, I wish I had your life, or something. And it, like, hit me that, you know, especially when you're trying and things are so sensitive, especially like social media, right, where you see pregnancy announcements or babies, and, you know, it touches a chord. And I realized I was feeding into that. I realized that, you know, from the outsider's view, all they saw was me and my husband, because we traveled like crazy during the time we were trying, because it was my way of just like escaping. So all they saw were like 6 years of us traveling everywhere. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, and then now I have this like beautiful baby that, you know, now I'm a mom. And that's when I was like, I need to tell my story and tell people, actually, for the last 6 years, I've been really struggling and it's been really difficult. And I did. I came out with my story, and instantly, like, I had so many close friends say they never knew, they're sorry, because, you know, you get insensitive comments too. They don't mean harm, but they'll ask you like the teasing questions, like, why don't you have a baby yet? When are you gonna have a baby? And so that's how I started coming out with my fertility. And then that's when I realized that a lot of my emotions were still, it was very therapeutic to finally come out. And not only that, many women and friends or strangers who heard my story was like, this has helped me so much in their own journeys. And ultimately, we were not sure if we were going to try for a second, because I felt like I was beyond lucky and grateful. I was so grateful to have one. I thought trying for another one was like pushing it. But at that point, I was 37 years old, I believe, 37, 38. And, you know, time is of the essence for fertility. And I said to my husband, like, well, if we do want to try for a second one, we have to kind of just do it now. So what happened was, also, since I had come out with my journey, I said to my husband, I was like, how to just increase awareness, like, I should document my whole IVF cycle, my whole journey from start to finish, to show people what it's really like to go through, you know,
so cycle. So Jasmine, yeah. On that, you mentioned work, you mentioned a massive shift when you actually threw yourself straight from that appointment, that devastating appointment, you went straight to work, and you realized that how you tackle your fertility journey is completely different to the work problem. How supportive was your work environment? environment, because let's face it, this treatment went on for a very long time. You would have had appointments and scans and blood tests and transfers and egg collections, etc. How did you factor that into your work environment, given that you didn't tell anyone at work what you were going through?
Yeah, it was the treatments and everything are generally all in the morning. So what would happen would be like I would go there at like 7 a.m. for all my appointments. So all the appointments that most the bulk of the appointments were in the morning. But there was when I started doing IVF and it was, you know, really more time intensive. I did tell just one person at work. I forgot about this, and it was my manager. It was my, you know, production manager. And I let them know kind of, you know, discreetly, I'm going through a medical thing and I might be late or, you know, might have to miss. And luckily, I have sick days and I have vacation time. So I would use that. I mean, I would say that, like, there was no resources or anything for fertility at work. It was, there's like insurance. I did luckily have an insurance that covered part of it, but even that was like really hard to dig into. Not many people knew about it. I had to, you know, do a lot of the work myself. So I hope it's changed now, but when I was going through it, there was very little support, to be honest with you. I mean, I could have if I opened up more with work, it would have been different, but I, you know, they allowed me time off using sick days and vacation days, but and I don't think I was penalized at all for it. But like, as you know, a support for going through it, there wasn't much. And that's my own fault in a way, just because I wasn't very vocal about it, because I was a little bit, I don't want to say ashamed, but I probably was. I was ashamed, right, that I was going through it, and I wanted to hide it.
Yeah, look, that's something that I do hear a lot. There is a lot of shame. There is a lot of guilt, especially when you can actually have a diagnosis that points to one partner or one aspect of it more than the other. Then there is a lot of guilt and shame in that process. You said the art, you found that the mind of an artist helped you shift your focus around your fertility journey. Now, I've had a look at your Instagram page and it is absolutely gorgeous. Is that where you came out with your story and you portraying this through art? Was it Instagram? Where did you first start telling your story?
No, it was not through Instagram, actually. It was just through Facebook Live, honestly. It was just me going on Facebook Live and talking. So, like, thinking back, I was like, as you said that, I was like, oh, that would have been interesting to do it through, like, the direct art, like, in Instagram. That came a little later. But no, it was just, like, raw talking through Facebook Live.
Very healing indeed by the sounds of it. Now, when you were starting to do this, did you have any resources when you started to look through a different mindset, through the artist mindset? Did you find any resources at that time that you found helpful?
I didn't, to be honest with you, because that's why it was such an aha moment. It was something that I did naturally, because it was, you know, it's kind of that thing where you do something, you don't realize you do it, or you don't realize it's different. Like, everyone's mind works differently. And to yourself, you're like, oh, everyone must think this way, right? Until you step back and you're like, wait, not everyone thinks this way. So, I mean, right now there are books and everything surrounded around design thinking, but definitely not that I have seen, especially geared towards fertility. So I just used my own experience and as a professional artist into how do I adapt that into fertility.
That's incredible. And you said you have two beautiful children now. Is that the end of your fertility treatment, or are you going for that third?
I wish, honestly, but I am about to be 41 years old this summer, actually this month. And so it's very unlikely. And we decided after the last fertility treatment that we would not do any more, just because it's a lot on my body. And yeah, and I mean, I joked with my doctor, my OBGYN, she actually asked me, like, oh, what's your birth control method, right, after my second child? And I laughed at her, and I was just like, hey, if I get pregnant naturally, I'm gonna take it. So
That's, of course, and you would be exactly at that stage. But can I tell you, don't look anywhere near 41 or approaching 41 years of age at all.
Oh, yeah. Well, I definitely am.
You obviously have great genetics there because you don't look it. So that's fantastic. And I love the fact that there's no birth control at all, because that's such a beautiful thing. And there are so many women who do fall pregnant in their 40s.
Yeah. And I mean, I'd be perfectly happy if that, I'd be so happy if that happens. But no, we have decided that I'm not going to actively do any more fertility treatments.
Okay. And that would be fair enough after the journey that you've had. Now, if you were giving a suggestion, Jasmine, to others who were preparing to go on their fertility journey or who are just starting out, what would you recommend to them?
I would recommend to them what took me, you know, 5+ years to do myself, which is approaching your journey with the artist's mindset in a way that I did. And what that means is that you stop and you get to know yourself. You figure out, because everyone's unique, right? You figure out what's going to really fulfill you and make you happy. Because I feel like a lot of us on this journey focus so much on the baby, right? Like, if I get pregnant, I'll be happy. If I have a baby, I'll be happy. But in reality, it's often your happiness is not dependent on that child, right? So it's first figuring out what really will make you happy, and then doing your research, being your best own advocate, and getting multiple opinions on your situation instead of just trusting one person at a time, which I definitely did in the beginning. Like, I just get one person saying, okay, do this, and then I'd be like, okay, I'll do that, you know? And then, yeah, once you get the multiple perspectives, then you pick the right solution for you at the time. And I think just the biggest thing is being your own best advocate, right? Which means to fight for your, I don't want to say fight for yourself because that sounds aggressive, but to know yourself and know what will work best for you, because you know yourself the best.
Absolutely. That sounds like great advice. Now, can you remember the place, time, and the outfit you were wearing when you first found out you were pregnant? Was it a really significant sort of time? I know you've had two of these moments now, but it was with this last doctor that you were with. Do you remember that day as a clear memory as to when and where that happened and what cycle it was?
Yes. So I don't remember what I was wearing. When you said that, I was like, oh, I don't remember what I was wearing.
But some people do.
I definitely remember exactly where I was. I was at work. It was a phone call. I was at work, and it was after the third IVF, and my phone rang. I rushed to like the windows, I remember, to pick it up, and it was my doctor. And the first thing, I just don't remember this, the first thing he said was to me, he was just like, he sounded very happy, and I remember thinking like, oh, he sounds happy, that's good. And then he said, have you spoken to my nurse yet? And I was like, oh no, I haven't. And then he got like really excited. He's like, oh, I beat her, because apparently they both make phone calls, and they like depending. And he was so funny about it. He was like a little kid. He's like, oh, yes, I beat her, because, you know, we're both making phone calls. So sometimes, like, and I thought that was really, like, really funny of him to, you know, be his first thing. He's like, oh, so I get to tell you. And then I remember, and then he just said it. He was just like, I have great news, you're pregnant. And I remember my first reaction, the first thing out of my mouth was, are you serious? And his response was like very matter of fact. And then he just said, if I was joking or lying, I'd be a horrible person right now. Of course I'm not kidding. And I was just like, oh my God. And he was like, yeah, he was like, congratulations. And he gave me like a little bit of, you know, the sum up, and told me like the next step, which was probably like to come in, make an appointment to come in, because his nurse will be calling. He's just like, oh, now the nurse will be calling me with the logistics and the next step. And I hung up the phone, and at this point I still had not told anyone at work, really. Yeah. So I was like looking around, and then of course I called my husband like that very moment, and I told him, and he was also at work, and he also didn't tell anyone at work. So like I remember I couldn't wait to go home so like we could actually celebrate. But then I just remember being like really happy, but then I had to hide it. So like I just like went back to work and I was like all excited. But that was the moment that I remember.
That's beautiful. I love the fact that your doctor called you to try and get that phone call in. That would have been a great experience to have a doctor call you to tell you those results. And the fact that you couldn't share it with anyone at work, that would have been like a long time to wait to actually celebrate. But no, that's fantastic. Now, Jasmine, I know that you've got, you know, the beautiful Instagram and Facebook pages, and we'll put all the links to that at the end of the show in the show notes. Do you have a favorite quote that resonates with you? Do you have something, a favorite quote or saying that resonates with you?
Yes. I mean, there are many, but the one that I really love is life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you respond to it. I feel like that resonates with me so strongly, and I really believe it because, you know, life happens. There's so many obstacles that will get in your way, but it's how you choose to respond to it is what changes everything. Right, I could have chosen to respond to the news of the less than 1% a very different way than I did, and I'd be a different person sitting here right now probably, and I don't know if I'd have kids. But there's those moments in life, every like even the small moments, right? Just, you know, someone cuts you off in the car, how are you going to respond to that? You know, it goes with everything in life, big and small. So I love that quote a lot. Life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you respond to it.
That's a great quote. I love that too. And I ask this question of all my guests. So when was the last time that you did something for the first time, and what was it?
Let me think. Oh, I know. Just yesterday, I made ceviche for the first time. And ceviche is the fish, like the Peruvian fish dish that is, I always thought it was raw fish until I looked more into it. And it is cooked, technically cooked with citrus juice, like lime and orange juices. And I've always loved ordering ceviche in, you know, the restaurants and stuff. But it occurred to me that I can try and make this myself. And I made it just the other night, and it was fantastic, and my kids loved it too, and it was like such a, you know, a little accomplishment that I felt great trying something new. And you know, it's now a new staple. It's going to be a new staple for summer in our household.
That sounds fabulous. A new recipe is always a good thing. Now, Jasmine, I'm going to put your contact details in the show notes, and as always, if anyone would like to get in touch with me, you can get in touch with me through my website or the link, which is www.ivfcoachingclinic.as.me. Jasmine, thank you so much for telling your story. It is such an incredible story. And as I said, we will put the links to your Instagram and Facebook page in the show notes, and people can get in touch with you there.
Yeah, that sounds great. And thank you for having me. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
It is my pleasure. And a story shared is going to help someone on their journey. So thank you so much for sharing yours today.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining us, and we hope you learned something new today. If you'd like more information, please visit our website at www.ivfcoachingclinic.com.au or our Facebook page, IVF Coaching Clinic, where you can talk to Sophia directly and find out more information about coaching and how it can assist you further. Until next time.